Hey, it's the JRR You Tolkien to Me podcast. We got episode 2 of the Disney Plus series Willow, episode 2, The High Alduin, and Jude Fox, are you Tolkien to me tonight?
I have been practicing my spells in a galaxy far, far away, getting ready for this one.
Okay, so this is Willow. I think you may have the wrong George Lucas show.
Are you sure about that? Because I'm not so convinced.
Well, we'll see. We'll see. Anyway, we're going to go through it. We're going to talk about this second episode. I think they kicked up the humor a little bit in it for me. I liked it. And we're going to analyze it a little bit. We're going to go through a scene-by-scene breakdown, as always. And let's just go right in there and start it out.
Let's get in.
Anyway, so there's a flashback that Willow is having. Willow's not having the flashback. We're seeing a flashback scene.
We're having a flashback.
So anyway, it's Willow is going back to Ter Aslin. That sounds a little funny. And so Elora was a small child at this point. And we see a younger Willow and Sorsha, and they're talking, and he's telling her about his prophetic dream, which we discussed in the first episode.
And Willow has a beautiful braided goatee, just so we know that it's a flashback.
This is a different time, people, and he's got a big beard for future.
Yes.
So, anyway, he thinks it's time to begin Elora's training. The true enemy is still alive, he tells her. And Willow then argues that her magic will fade. That shit is going to fade if it's not kept up. If you don't have her practice from a young age, it's going to be a problem later on, like gymnastics.
If you don't use it, you lose it.
That's right. But Sorsha, she's like, maybe I don't want her to be magical. It's a burden. It's a responsibility. I don't think she needs that.
And it may not be good for the realm. At least that's what she thinks.
So, Sorsha, she had her own plan. She had sent her husband, Mad Mardigan, to find the Chimerian Cuirass, which ancient scrolls. She consulted ancient scrolls to find this goddamn Chimerian Cuirass. Jude?
That cuirass.
Didn't you get some cuirass before from the drugstore?
Yeah, but you know, it really didn't do the job.
Because you have Tulkus on the Tukus. Cuirass doesn't work on Tulkus on the Tukus.
You know, if only my doctor had told me that.
Anyway. So, what happened was Mad Mardigan at this point in time had been searching for the Chimerian cuirass for 9 months. And she thinks maybe he's dead. She fears that he's dead. This is in the flashback, folks.
Maybe 9 months. Maybe that cuirass had a baby.
But anyway, she doesn't believe that Sorsha doesn't believe that there's anyone left who can train Elora. Razel is gone, and Charlendria is also gone.
But Willow's a great sorcerer.
But Willow's the hot shit High Alduin now, and he thinks he can train her. He is the sorcerer that Razel said that he'd be. He's great. Nope. She's like, dude, your sorcery kind of blows.
You suck.
You're the bravest. But you're awesome. You got heart, kid. But your sorcery skills are quite lacking.
Your disappearing pig trick is amazing.
You know, you're a disappearing pig kind of guy. So anyway, we're back in present day, and we're at the Nelwyn village. And Willow takes them, the fellowship, in to meet the other Nelwyn villagers. And most of all, they meet Mims. Willow's daughter, and she was the one that found the chosen baby in the first place.
And Mims is played by Warwick Davis's actual daughter, Annabelle Davis.
And that's actually a very good thing. I'll talk about that in a later scene, how well that plays out. Anyway, so when she meets Mims, Mims is clearly enamored with Allura. And she's almost, you would say that she's starstruck to see the chosen one and the baby. And she's just ecstatic.
She's a bit of a fangirl.
Yeah. And Allura is actually, she's very gracious. And she thinks, she tells Mims that Mims is beautiful.
Yep.
In return. Anyway, so Willow now has to address the whole village as the High Alwyn. And Willow's approach is, he's sort of like a British Borscht Belt comedian, in a way.
He tries a bit of stand-up.
He does stand-up. And it's a comical situation for Warwick to exercise his comedic chops with. But
he gets nothing but crickets.
He seriously underwhelms them, both with his jokes and his lack of solid answers. He talks about the balance of good and evil, you know, sweet and spicy. and he talks about how Allura will bring back balance. When will she do this?
Whenever.
Soon?
Maybe.
Soon?
Yeah.
And how long will Allura's training take place? Depends. Depends on her talent, depends on her prior experience.
Basically, Willow here proves that he's still just a charlatan. At least to a large extent.
But, you know, look. She fails the finger test.
Oh, the finger test.
That's on her.
Hey, do you have anything to say about the finger test?
You know, the finger test could have been a lot of things.
It really could. I mean, when the crowd starts chanting, finger test! Finger test. Like, she has a look on her face, and it did not look comfortable.
If they were the Harfoots, I would have been really concerned.
It definitely didn't look comfortable. She was a little bit taken back. Like, wait, what?
Last time I asked a young lady to pass the finger test, I got in big trouble.
Yeah, well, I'm not surprised.
And did she like it?
No, she did not.
No. So, but I am a fan of Warwick Davis. His comedic, his self-abasing delivery. I loved his show Life's Too Short, produced by Ricky Gervais. His comedic chops were at work, and they work well in the fantasy context, especially since he was the original Willow. So I think they're giving him a broader stage, a chance to like be himself.
Yeah, Warwick is terrific here.
It humanizes the character, and it sets the show apart from other fantasy shows when the voice is organic, I think. And I like it. So anyway, the whole village is very unimpressed by Willow and by Allura thus far. They were underwhelmed.
Just a bit.
And then we cut to the lich, the sorcerer. The guy looks like he has leprosy and a thing on it. His face is all messed up and he's blind and he's all twitchy.
Well, lich in and of itself essentially means an animated corpse.
That makes sense.
It's pretty much like what they would have called a zombie way back in the day.
Yeah, but more like a 28 Days Later type zombie.
Right, well,
he's a fast zombie.
It's rather undefined in terms of its etymology. It's just any kind of an animated corpse would be a lich. Right. Like a vampire would be a type of lich. A zombie would be a type of lich. It's an old term for that.
So anyway, he's at a fire and he's communing with an evil force. He says, "Teacher."
And who is that?
"The child has revealed herself."
And who's his teacher?
Yeah, so it's Bav.
Oh,
good. It's Bav Morda.
Bav.
I believe.
It does seem that way.
Could
yeah.
be, you know.
There could be a misdirect. But it seems pretty obvious that it is.
So anyway, he just makes that statement and the fire erupts. And then Sorsha's handmaid. At the same time, we cut to the scene back at the castle, and Sorsha's handmaid tells her that Elora has left. Because Sorsha's handmaid is in on it, and Sorsha then has Ballantine. She tells him to bring home. She doesn't tell him it's Elora. She says it's the kitchen maid. Brunhilde, I guess we're going to find out her name is.
Yeah, who people know at this point the prince has had an interest in, so it would make sense for the queen to want her back if something's happened to her.
Right, so, but essentially you want to remember that Ballantine has been infected by evil, by the Lich.
It's a mere splinter or something. No big deal, I'm sure.
The Lich is now in control, and Bavmorda,
presumably,
he tells her that he is already on top of things, and he's sending his disciple, Ballantine, to hunt her down.
TIE fighter.
So he's already on that shit, Bav, baby. He got you back. Lich. The Lich don't snitch. That's his motto.
It's a good motto.
Because he was in prison. I don't know.
Well, you know, anyway, he comes from the streets.
Let's go back to the Nelwyn village. And they're eating, they're having their feast. And Willow tells Elora, he's talking to her casually, and he's like, you can't use magic to make food. Apparently, she was interested in that. Gives you the shits, apparently. What do you think about that, Jude? Jude's had magic food a lot.
You know,
apparently,
what people call quote-unquote magic food, I do not recommend, yeah.
No. So anyway, they talk about the long, arduous journey. The whole fellowship is there. That is ahead. And Willow argues with them because they all really want to leave immediately and go save Eric. But Willow is trying to get them to understand that Elora needs to learn magic.
Yep, yep.
So he's getting frustrated with that. And anyway, Willow then is talking to Mims. And Willow tells Mims that the world will burn if anything happens to Elora.
And which is a little bit of a contradiction for something he says later, but we'll get into that when it comes up.
He means before she saves it.
Right, but again, we'll get into that at his vision towards the end of the episode.
Well, Mims is very much a cheerleader here. She convinces him to rise to meet the challenge and to go with them and to train Elora and then to eventually give Elora the wand, the very special wand that belonged to Sherlindria.
Yeah, Mims is pretty awesome and rather cute, I might add.
Okay. She is. She's a cute person. Then Kit and Jade argue. Once again, Kit and Jade argue a lot.
Because it's a relationship.
Yes.
That's how it works.
Yeah. Someday Jude will know.
Not today.
Kit is skeptical. She does not yet believe that Dove, the kitchen maid who makes the great muffins that her brother's into, is Elora Dannon of the famous Dannon yogurt family.
Yummy.
That's why she's the chosen one. It's delicious. So anyway, Bormann, on the other hand, doesn't care if she is Elora Dannon. He wants to leave because I guess the adventure calls for it. And Graydon believes that she is the chosen one. But then Willow ends up yelling at all of their asses because Elora's once again missing.
And so right here, I have to ask, how does Graydon know, how is he so convinced that Elora is who she's being claimed to be? It seems once again that he knows more, or there's a little bit more to what's going on with him and his family than meets the eye at the moment.
He is the harpy.
Hmm.
So, anyway, yeah, that's a good point. We can't overlook that because there's got to be some kind of mystery here, people. So,
like he comes from Carcosa.
So here's the part that I like. I like that when they're looking for Elora and Willow's had it now, And Kit kind of pulls that, like, Gen Z style sarcasm on him. Like, oh, she's probably up leg in the field, dude. And he's just like, oh, yeah, I forgot you were hilarious. I love that line. He just slapped the shit out of her with that one. I forgot you were hilarious. So he's yelling at them because, look, the fate of the world could rest in the balance of us finding her right now. Stop messing around and arguing about this stuff.
Immature.
And he does find her. We go to the river, and Elora's at the river.
Where she was found.
Yeah, and she's putting her wreath. They gave her a crown wreath on her head, and she's taking that off her head, and she's putting it in the river. And Willow finds her, and she tells him that she's afraid she's not going to be able to do magic or save Eric. And she pleads with him to go with them. And they agree. You know, he tells her, if I'm going, you must listen to me. You must learn magic. And we have to agree that you're the student and I'm the teacher and I know what the hell I'm talking about. And she says she's excited to learn magic and whatnot.
She's like, yeah, I was looking for a teacher this whole time.
It's just funny because she definitely has the Gen Z vibe.
You mean obnoxious?
A little obnoxious, a little silly, sarcastic, and meta. But I have to say, in this next scene, I really love Mims.
Yes.
She's hugging Willow, and it seems really authentic. They're saying goodbye.
It's touching. There's mm-hmm. And she does a great job. Annabelle, she does a terrific job. I really would like to see more of her as an actress.
She said, you've always been my hero.
Yep.
To her dad. Very authentic scene. And they are truly father and daughter in real life. So that works. Anyway, Ballantine, now we're back to Ballantine. He's tracking them. And
TIE Fighter.
He does not want to rest. And Merrick, his second in command, is like, dude, what's up with you lately? What's gotten into you? And Ballantine does the fast motion 28 days later zombie attack mode on him. And he tackles him. And he's like, now he's giving him the power of evil purpose.
Oh, he tackles that guy like a pro linebacker tackling a 12-year-old child.
The 28 like days later zombie attack.
It's brutal. It's worse.
And he looked like one.
Yeah.
Purpose. He's got purpose.
Boy, does he.
And he wants the other dude, Merrick, to have purpose as well. And he does, because he's back. He doesn't kill him. He just gives him purpose. Anyway, we're back to the Fellowship, and Bormann is talking to Kit.
Oh, we're going to get our favorite subject.
Right, about looking for the Chimerian cuirass.
Not cuirass.
No.
Cuirass.
It's the ass cure from Chimeria.
What exactly could that possibly Chimeria. Be? I mean,
it's from Crimea.
Chimerian cuirass sounds like a donkey with a medical degree.
Anyway.
Like,
it's more clever than an owl with a master's degree. So, Mad Mardigan, Bormann was looking for the Chimerian cuirass with Mad Mardigan for 5 years. They spent 5 years searching the world for this
5 years.
Armor. We got 5 years.
David Bowie wrote a song about that.
Yep. So this is a famous armor chest plate that is impervious.
Yep. It seems like they're setting up yet another Easter egg to pay off later on down the road.
Right. So anyway, we're going to find out more about that. So that relationship is developing along those lines. And now we're back to Elora, and she's excited to learn some magic. Yeah.
While riding a cart.
She's in a cart, and
it's bumpy.
Yeah, we're going to do some magic, and Willow starts to tell her about, he's like, we're going to talk about magic. He's like, take it slow. But she's getting sick from the rocking of the carriage, and And he's like, well, it's part of the nature of the beast here, really. There's nothing I can do about it. You know, so they're rocking back and forth, and he starts to talk about magic and starting to realize that she has really not much aptitude for magic so far. And the more they both are sort of realizing it in a comical sort of way, he says, it has to come from within. And what do you think happens, Jude?
I think this is a whole ton of setup for a little barf gag.
Yep. She barfing right on him.
That being said, I know something else that some people refer to as magic. It's called the Force. Just pointing that out.
Yep. Well, I think you're right and you're wrong.
Well, you know. Let's keep going.
Yeah. So at night, we're at the campfire now at night. Because she threw up on him and everything. And he told her, you know, look, Sorsha kept me from training you at a young age. So that was a little discouraging. But he's trying to be super patient and nice. And that's the funny part. So we're at night and it's the campfire. And Willow is trying to instruct Allura on how to transfer energy, which is the essence of all magic, really.
Yeah, and he describes it as transforming energy from one form to another, which is essentially the concept of the law of conservation in physics.
Oh, totally. And he gives her some eckleberry seeds. They're going to plant a spell, and then the spell is basically going to manipulate energy to accelerate the growth of the eckleberry seeds. And you know what it is? Thuatha, Anthrak, Mora, Hawatha.
And short of the spell, he describes magic as a energy which moves through you and is all around us, and essentially, very much the same way Qui-Gon Jinn describes the Force in The Phantom Menace.
I think, comedy aside, though, maybe have the spell written out. In a book?
Well, which he has.
Or say it a little slower for
which
her?
He has. He just doesn't show her so that she can actually read it. Which is a little bit odd.
So we wanted to get comedic there. That's Ron. Yeah. Ron Howard thought of this one. Thuatha, Anthrak Mora, Huatha. No problem if you have it written out. I got it written. Willow. But it's funny.
Yeah, well, you know, it's also no problem, apparently, if you're great on Houster, who is lipping it. Very much, almost like, you know, mimicking it perfectly, which clearly, once again, set up, I think, for later on.
Well, he's also just smart. But I have to say, as someone who's taught a lot of guitar, I could really feel the pain of Willow in that repeating lines over and over again while someone butchers it. And they're trying to get it down. You got to be super nice about it. Well, yeah, kind of, you know, I totally relate to that. That's very much a universal thing for people that teach. Anyway, so Warwick does a good job making this shtick work. And what are you doing with your face? Like when she's butchering it.
No,
like, you're doing really well.
His comedic timing is awesome. Mm-hmm.
And so Kit wants to know how long it's going to take before she's going to be shooting lightning out of her fingertips. And you know, Warwick is like, battle magic. I mean, Willow is like, battle magic is pretty far off. She needs to basically get the fundamentals, the four pillars together before battle magic.
What are the four pillars?
I didn't.
So it's charms, potions, concentration, and divination, which, I'm pretty sure he got from being a teacher at Hogwarts.
Yeah. Battle magic. And battle magic's not. She's like, that sounds like fun.
He's like, no, it's not.
It's not.
No, it's not.
Well, Allura, she's just a kid. Anyway.
She is.
Now we got a flashback to Willow talking to Allura as a child.
How do we know it's a flashback?
Because he's got a fancy goatee.
Oh, yeah.
But But she runs from him because he's trying to take her away from her home, and she's a child.
Well, now, what did he say to her to make her run? We never hear it. We never find out why she actually runs, because they're having a sweet interaction, and then all of a sudden, it cuts to her running off in a different area, so we don't actually know.
Because he mentioned her liking his kids and living there, maybe. I don't know. So he has
he's kidnapping me.
He has a falling out with Sorsha for this, for obvious reasons. He's trying to take the child, and the disrespect.
Oh, boy. He feels very disrespected.
Yeah. So now we're back to Ballantine and company.
TIE Fighter.
They're approaching the Nelwyn village.
Yep.
And he asks Mims if they've seen a girl traveling with the princess.
Yeah.
And Mims lies, and she says that Willow, he thought that their mission was hopeless, and he's taking them back to Ter Aslin by the Saracen Path.
And Mims proves herself to be quite the badass, standing against TIE Fighter there, and
like, you wouldn't be lying to me, would you, Peck? And I think Peck is a derogatory
term. It is, yes. Yeah, we
learned
that in the movie.
She looks very scared. She says, "No, sir."
With contempt. She's like, "No, sir."
But also with fear. Anyway, Merrick then tells Merrick's the second in command, who he had just attacked zombie style. But now he's back, probably, you know, with the same evil force running through him. And Merrick tells Ballantine that Trax lead west. So she was lying, but by the time they turn around, Mims is gone, vanished into the village.
They vanished, and is it just me, or did it appear that when he turns around, he looked like he was probably going to strike down anyone that was standing there?
Maybe. He's evil.
That was the vibe I got from that, that he was going to eliminate them.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, why wouldn't he?
Yeah.
So anyway, so now we're back to Allura. She's practicing all day to say the chant. No avail.
Nothing.
She tells Willow her name is actually Brunhilde. Not even Dove.
It's a pretty name.
Willow's like, ugh. And she got picked on for it. Willow urges her to keep trying. And then he gets a little frustrated. She says, if she ever wants to see Eric again, let alone save him, she has to focus. So things are getting a little tense around her abilities there.
Yeah, and in the same scene, we see Jade and Kit speaking, and Jade is kind of playing with her throwing stars, which we've already seen she's quite proficient with. But she's kind of spinning them around her fingers very much, you know, you mentioned Gen Z before, I believe. Very much like fidget spinners or something. She's just constantly kind of playing with them.
So we get those little accents of modernity there, especially with the younger characters. Anyway, so Kit and Jade are arguing again about whether or not to follow Willow. And then Graydon approaches Allura.
Yeah.
While she's sitting alone practicing, and he offers her his assistance, if needed, in reading any arcane spells or things like that, because he's good at that type of shit.
As we've seen.
And which, you know, Jude's got a little bit of a theory budding. That could be something.
Well, you know, in this scene, he is clearly making eyes at her, and the way he's speaking to her seems to at least imply, if not say, that he may be like infatuated or secretly in love with her in some capacity, which, you know, I'm kind of curious to see how that's going to play.
It could also be that other thing that you were talking about. Maybe there's some sort of nefarious thing happening with him and his dad.
I feel that it may be a bit of both.
Or maybe it's nothing.
Yeah, that. But
I kind of hope he's a good guy.
My early thoughts are that he may have a nefarious purpose that's been set out for him, and yet
he
finds that because he is in Fetcher, of course I want him to be Sauron.
Is he
going to
make any rings?
I want everyone to be Sauron.
Is he going
to
make the, what's that armor called again? The cuirass?
The cuirass.
Anyway.
But I think that because I think he has a nefarious purpose, and that perhaps if he's in love with her, he'll have a turn towards the good side when the time counts.
All right. Well, what happens here is he turns into a huge cheerleader because Allura confides in Graydon that she's feels very ordinary and not gifted. And he tells her that everyone else around her believes how extraordinary she is. So this is meant to be a little pep talk here.
Yep. Oh, he definitely.
So she then goes back. The next scene, she's got her eyes closed and she's trying again, but nothing yet. Anyway, at night, Willow tells her friend, his friend, Silas.
Yes.
His hobbit friend. What are they called again?
Nelwyn's.
The Nelwyn, his Nelwyn friend. He thinks that they should turn back.
Silas, by the way, cannot be a good character's name, can it? Can it?
But
is it possible?
It seems to be. He's just
like Silas. Like that's a villain name.
He's a regular dude, though.
I'm just saying.
Anyway, the power, according to Willow, the power inside her has dissipated, he thinks. So in his vision, he then tells Silas about the true vision.
Yeah.
Silas had it a little bit wrong. He said he wakes up on a battlefield, his body is broken, there's corpses everywhere, and he finds Allura dead. And he can't change that fate. That's always the way it is. And in order for the world to survive, Allura Danann has to die.
So all of that vision seems to contradict what we were told and what we saw earlier on, in that he has already said, and I believe Sorsha said, that the prophecy says that in order for the world not to burn, Allura must stand to face the crone.
Which is true, but in doing so, she's going to die.
He's
withholding that piece of the prophecy.
So it's
because,
a bit of a twist on the prophecy.
That's
wording,
a heavy weight
issue
to bear. Because he can't really tell Sorsha that, right?
Well,
I don't know.
Can, technically.
Does she know the true prophecy?
I think this is an interesting
probably not
twist on it.
Probably
we'll
not.
We'll see what happens.
So anyway, next we cut to Kit, and she is waking up Bormann. Which I wouldn't recommend doing that. That guy's on the alert. Anyway.
He's a bit jittery.
She wants more information on her father and the Chimerian cuirass. But we don't get that right now. We cut scene. Allura is waking up. And still no magical sprout in the ground.
None yet.
From those schmuckleberry seeds, whatever they're called.
Hey, they make good jam.
She's getting really frustrated. She starts pawing at the ground and yelling and screaming out the spell and
punching the ground a little bit.
Yeah, and guess who knocks her out?
TIE Fighter.
Ballantine.
TIE Fighter.
Just knocks her out. And then we get a cover of Donovan's Hurdy Gurdy Man by guess who? It's Sir Jude.
Hey now.
Sir Jude, not Jude Fox.
Oh, damn it.
But a very attractive female singer.
But now, just before that, though, what we do see, the last shot of this episode, is the sprouting of those seeds just before Allura is dragged away. So we actually do confirm that she is, in fact, magic.
Oh. How did I miss that?
I don't know. You've watched it several times.
Yeah. Now, come to think of it, you're right. The seeds do sprout.
They sprout, and when the screen turns to an illustration, we see a colored version of the berry.
And I have to say, to myself, a doy.
A doy. Is the way you say it.
Yeah, a doy. Anyway, I should have, I didn't, I can't believe that. But, yeah. I will say that now that you mention it, I totally see it in my head.
Yeah, yeah, I'm sure you do.
And I also think that it's rich and compelling.
Hey, now.
That the evil act of him clubbing her and capturing her occurs at the same time as the hopeful act.
Yes.
Of the sprouting of the schmuckleberry seeds.
So I'm sure that things are going to turn out well for her kidnappers.
She's going to have to develop some skills, maybe on the job.
Hey, now.
Some of us learn it in the streets. So, what, you got anything else to add about episode 2?
No, I'm looking forward to seeing where we go next and what revelations are brought out in the coming episodes. And once again, I'm enjoying the rather lighthearted fantasy that we're getting here. And
well, it's lighthearted, but the villains are pretty badass.
Right.
So that kind of raises the stakes on that side.
In addition to it being lighthearted, I know we both had criticisms with the writing quality of our flagship show, Rings of Power. However, I think that the writing in this, at least, is showing promise to pay off in a promising way, so I'm definitely down to see where this goes.
Well, you know, it's interesting because for fantasy purists, they have this a lot of the similar issues with both shows, aside from even the obviously more socio-political issues that people, that type of baggage that people are bringing to the criticism of this show seems to be a lot. And with Rings of Power too, but there's a lot of legitimate criticism. We covered that. I think some of that is applicable to this show.
Yeah,
to less of an extent. I would say the one thing that comes to mind is the fact that we have the American and the British accents happening at the same time for no real reason.
Yeah, I think that's. Maybe one of my biggest issues right now is.
But I don't hate it for some reason. Right, I got used to it instantly.
The idea that a small group of people would have either different ethnicities or different accents when, especially in a medieval type society, that generally would not be the case because over generations, you're going to have a homogenous group of people, at least in a small clan, or even a small village or city. So that is a little bit of an issue. Like, yes, in the big cities, in the castle, I can see some differentiation. But that being said, it's not irking me too badly. It's a little bit of an issue.
I think the fact that the show is funny and that the interactions are authentic and somewhat realistic is unique enough and charming enough to offset it.
It definitely has a charm, and I'm down for it.
Well, Ron Howard, you know, I mean, George Lucas, they have a certain charm to their productions. That's why everyone loves
Star
Wars.
Are you saying that they're not bad filmmakers?
They're known for
their
filmmaking. So, I'm also enjoying the Warwick aspect of it all. I hope that Ricky Gervais, I wish that he was on the show.
Well, you know, I'm just excited by the fact that I believe this to be a Star Wars prequel, and I think eventually we're going to get some revelation of that.
Well, just to me,
it's George Lucas, it's Ron Howard who directed Solo, A Star Wars Story. You know, come on, like, there's connections already there, they're already there.
Yeah, that's fun for everyone, Jude. But what I'm saying is more important, because I'm saying it, and this is
whatever.
What I'm saying. Could you imagine if someone like Ricky Gervais could just walk onto the show and be Ricky Gervais personality-wise and the way he speaks, the cadence of his speech, just regular Ricky Gervais. That could happen on this show, and it would totally work. And that's interesting to me.
Well, that being said, I think if Ricky Gervais were to come on this show, we would never recognize him and find out, like, 2 weeks after it airs.
Yeah, that would be funny.
But I could see it happening, but I think that's how it would go down.
They wouldn't even, they wouldn't put him in the cast.
No. We'd find out 2 weeks later, oh, the bartender that was uncredited was Ricky Gervais.
Yeah. Or Ricky's partner there, the very tall dude, Stephen Merchant.
Stephen Merchant, yeah.
He would be another excellent addition
yes.
to this.
Oh, I could definitely see him in something like this.
He's
also a really good actor,
well,
Stephen Merchant.
And also because they're sort of the, you know, Schlemiel, Schlemazel characters of Britain, the good luck and the bad luck and stupid of the thing, always getting into awkward situations and being an everyman but in the worst possible way.
Yep.
That's what the show needs more of, but Warwick's covering it pretty well. So anyway, I think you have anything else to add to this episode's analysis breakdown?
No, I enjoyed it. Can't wait to see what happens next week, and we will be here to break it down and commentate on it.
Okay, so I am Rob Law. This is the JRR You Talking to Me podcast with episode 2 of Willow. And I will bid you a fond adieu, and Jude will take you out.
And I'm Jude Fox. And if you'd like to contact us, you can email us at youtalkintome@gmail.com. Join our Facebook group at You Talkin' To Me About The Fellowship. And I just want to remind everyone to like, subscribe, give us a 5-star rating wherever you find your podcasts, and share with your friends to help grow the fellowship. For now, bye-bye.